नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्स नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्स नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्स बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। So today is the Upostha day, the bhikkhus were heard Venerable Atino recite the Patimokkha at 4 o'clock, our fortnightly recitation of our rules. And Samanera Bodhisaro recited his rules of training. And we do this every fortnight for those of you who are new to our lifestyle. For the lay people who are resident in the monastery, you're living by the 8 precepts, which are kind of basic boundaries of monastic life and basic kind of both moral boundaries and also just sort of aesthetic boundaries. And then tonight, the idea is to, if you can, meditate till 12 o'clock if it works, but if you're exhausted, not to worry. I just want to reflect a bit on how we do. Aaron and I were talking about development of forget how we phrased it, but we were saying that this kind of idea that exists in Western culture that you have to develop a strong sense of self before you let go of the self. It's that kind of idea that exists. And I was reflecting on my own life that it was really how my sense of personhood evolved was through the environment and culture of monasticism rather than through some autonomous individual idea that I was trying to develop of what a strong self is. So my personhood, or whatever one would call that, or is more in line with, I would think, like the paramitas, which are to me the development of character. And these, the development of character that we talk about in Theravada Buddhism, are very much a foundation for enlightenment, for freedom, for the end of suffering. And they're not like autonomous things that you develop somehow on your own in total separation from culture or society. They're actually developed in a cultural setting, in a social setting, which is for us defined by the Vinaya rules, the Patimokkha, and just the general ethos that monasticism has. And there's that we live in a monastery under the, we submit ourselves to the authority of a rule, to the authority of a kind of cultural norm, which comes to us from the forest tradition, and for me specifically comes from Lompo Cha, Lompo Sumedho. And so the way I like to model our monastery, I model the monastery's ethos around what I've learned from Ajahn Chah and Ajahn Sumedho and other teachers. And that's the way monasteries evolve. And there are different styles in forest monasticism, different styles. Well, that's the style that I'm used to and that I like. So the idea of submitting to an authority is very kind of anti-cultural almost nowadays, because the whole thrust of modern culture is independence, autonomy, individualism, my own tastes, my own preferences, my own goals, and how do you optimize that? How do you make that come true in the world? Whereas the idea of submitting to authority is very has a almost, I think it would be kind of pejorative sense, a kind of negative sense. But if you think about how you learn something, you just think about Just think about frying an egg. You know, first time you had to break an egg, just to break an egg, just to break an egg, you might have done it as a kid or whatever, splatters are all the place, or the egg becomes full of the shell. You don't get the egg clean into the pan. What do you have to do to understand how to break an egg? You have to submit to the authority of the egg, not your own will. You have to figure out the physics of cracking an egg and letting it fall into the pan. So you submit your attention to the authority of the reality. Otherwise, you're never learning to cook an egg. And because you submit to the authority of nature, the Dharma of an egg, say, right, what happens is you develop skill. You first of all develop a skill of just being intelligent enough to notice this is an egg, it's not an apple. You may want an apple, but this is an egg. Right? It's not an apple, you realize, but I don't want, it's an egg. And it has its own laws, its own has its own. And then to fry an egg, you have to understand heat, the nature of the pan you're using, the kind of oil you're using, the timing of the whole process. And then if you want 12 eggs, or 12 people for breakfast, you have to figure out how to do all of that efficiently. So you make an omelet or whatever. But consider how you learn something. You learn something by giving up to the authority of the nature of the thing, and then that develops character, develops skill. And then that skill lets you live in the world in a relatively intelligent way, but also it also can be something that you can give back to society. So the good folk that cook our meals here, they come and they've developed those skills. And then they present these beautiful meals to us and say, Bhante, please, the dana is offered. So there's a joy and a happiness in the skill, but that joy and happiness came from submitting to the authority of the egg. You see what I mean? Take something more difficult, a musical instrument. You cannot willfully, autonomously sit in your room and think, play. Just play. You have to submit to the acoustics of the guitar or to the flow of wind into the flute or whatever it is. You have to submit to the nature of the body to be manipulated to play the instrument. You have to understand the nature of scales, or I've never played music, whatever it might be. So you submit to an authority other than your own ego, other than your own will. So you're not autonomously developing a kind of a self, right? Irrespective of the environment you're in, the situation you're in, the thing that you're dealing with. But from that, what do you have to do to actually play a musical instrument? You need a lot of patience. You need to practice a lot. You need to really watch the nuance of, like, you know, if it's a guitar, moving your fingers or whatever. You have to understand chords, you have to understand so many things. And that all of the engagement with the musical instrument is developing persistence, patience, intelligence, and all manner of good qualities, could be good qualities. Now certainly you might take the instrument and then be very egotistical about your abilities to play the musical instrument, but that's something else. But just the very craft or the very skill of learning to play, that it has that same principle, doesn't it? If you think like a translator translates from English to French, the person has to learn the language, the grammar of the language, the nuance of the language, the culture of the language. So putting something from, I can't translate, but if you translate from French to English, you have to understand the culture of the idea to get that culture across to the other culture. And it's not easy. And you can't, again, you have to submit to the authority of the language structure and the culture, not your own willful self-imposed ideas about the language. And that takes the skill of learning and trying out and experimenting and getting good results and not getting good results. You take a chainsaw. Try, you know, a lot of people take the chainsaw and just try to willfully use it. And we've gone through a lot of chainsaws. But a chainsaw is a very delicate instrument. I mean, it looks very robust, like it could, because it chops trees. Now, it's actually very delicate. And the kind of the mixture of gas and oil you put in, if the oil has been there for a long time, the sharpening of the chain. So if it's not working, you have to submit to the laws of two-cycle engines, whatever it is. You have to submit to that. You have to submit to the authority of the reality of that thing to learn about it. So if you're impatient, or you just want to get it done, you just want to willfully use this thing to get your own result, you have a bad result. You have a bad result, but also you won't develop any character. So in development in our monastic training, the way I learned it, Ajahn Chah, very much, and Lopalian too, very much stressed just the, you know, learning to do, like making bowl stands, or making your own robes, or here we do more kind of high-end construction, but just to having the patience to learn something new, like how to sew a rope. I've seen people go crazy on a sewing machine. It keeps the thread keeps breaking. But then I look at Venerable Suvijana doing cushions right now for Ajahn Jayanto, and I just like to go in there and look at him sew. And he just did four shirts the other morning, and it just got all really laid out, neat. You know, and you can see there's a system here. The man really, he knows what he's doing. And that skill, it's quite beautiful to see. It's quite beautiful to see. But to do that, he had to just practice. And now it flows, and there's a joy in that flow, and there's a joy in the generosity from that flow. So, you know, this kind of idea that I'm an autonomous person and I'm just developing a stronger self, a self to let go of self, to me that somehow, I've never used that model. To me it's more a model of kalyanamitta, like spiritual friendships. Say in Thailand with work, my attitudes to work were get it done, you know, get it done as fast as possible, and that was a very joyless attitude. And then I would be with Thai monks who actually, they had fun working. You know, like I remember once we were sawing cross-sawing a log which had fallen across a trail, and it was a log in diameter. It was probably 4 feet. That was huge. It was huge. So what do they do? They got this big cross-cut saw, T-handle saw, like you see in the old pictures in the around here. It was maybe 5 foot long, big teeth in it, and the saw blade had handles in it, which you used vertically, and they tied a rope to each of the handles, and there were four monks at one end and four monks at the other. No chainsaw. That's beautiful. I mean, it's such fun. Boom, 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 sawing. We got through it, and it was so lovely how they did that. It was fun, and in my mind it was, gee, why don't they get a chainsaw? But I don't know, so many chainsaws are broken here. I don't know if the chainsaws. I think I get across some soon. But what was interesting there was that by being in that environment, I could look at my own character and I could say, no, these men are much more skilled than me. They know how to work. I don't know how to work. I wasn't lazy. I was a hard worker, but my working was kind of frenetic and constantly goal-oriented and wasn't happy. And then I saw, these guys get a lot done, but they're much less stressed out at the end of it. And so that was a learning for me, a character learning which was not done in my kuti or in my own space independently of people. It was actually dependent on the goodness of Kalyanamitta, the skill of elders, the skill of a society which had a really fun way of working and getting things done. And so that, I think that that for us, for me at least, monasticism has that. It has the importance of solitude, but also the importance of learning to learn to work as a group, and developing those skills by giving up to the authority of the situation, because the situation is the authority here. That's the nature. It's not my willful imposition of what I want. That's just me and what I want or what I don't want. But what is it? What is this situation now? What is the egg like? The egg is not an apple. It's just not that way. So say in community life, whether one is a lay guest here or a resident for a longer period, the idea is to kind of see, well, this is the reality. This is the chanting these guys do. I was talking to one of the guests and he was saying, quite honestly, how just in our chanting, the word Lord Buddha, he found, got up his nose, because he has got a kind of virus against Catholicism. I think he had a viral affection very young. So the ideas of Catholicism for him are negative. And so when he sees the translation of Bhagava as Lord, that creates a negative reaction in him. Right? And in our contemplation of living this life and trying to living this life skillfully, what we're doing is we're seeing, well, this is the reality, this is the chanting, and the chanting's that way. Now, on one hand, you could say, yeah, it's a clumsy translation. Why don't we use the Pali Bhagavan? And, Sri Lankans are okay, Thais are okay, Westerners are not okay. What are we going to do? Let's get it right. Well, you could kind of try to retranslate it all, which we've done twice already. But you could also, as an individual, say, yeah, but this is, I have to submit to this reality. This is the reality of a convention that is given to me. And I live in this convention. What do I have to do to adapt to it, rather than what does it have to do to adapt to my needs? Obviously. I mean, it's so obvious, and yet we forget it sometimes. And so is it with each other as human beings. Like, what is it that about this person that I could adapt myself, not to submit to their authority in a kind of egotistical way, because we don't have that. We don't have a guru system, but just, you know, this is the reality of this person now. And how could my behavior be somehow bring as much harmony as possible? Sometimes harmony is not possible. So Venerable Bodhisattva will be going to Burma. And I asked him, so what's the best thing you've learned while you've been here? I asked him how long you've been here. He said, 18 months. And what's the best thing you've learned? He said, well, not only do I have to live by the rules, I should develop empathy and gratitude. And I said, A plus. he passed the test. And that's really how we, you know, it's not just submitting to authority, but what you think, what it, you know, go back to my silly example of the egg. Is it not empathy with the egg? Not an emotional sense, but what I'm plugging into is what is the physical reality of this thing. And so on a human level, we're not eggs. We're much more complex than eggs. Both in, you know, both our own minds and the minds of others. So if we see, say, like monastic life as somehow some kind of development of willful autonomy on my own and doing my own thing all the time, then that aspect of empathy gets lost and that aspect of gratitude gets lost. And yet those are very foundational Katanyukatavedi and the Brahmaviharas are very kind of foundational to the emotional maturity and emotional stability of spiritual life. Without those, the emotional heart that usually doesn't have enough stability. And so one can see that, like in monastic life, if one sees, well, it's not just about the projects that I do with this person, with these people, but it's the whole attitude that I bring to it, which is important. And so there's like an opportunity. How can I enter into this reality? Well, with empathy. What is the need of this reality? What is the need of this situation? What is the need of the monastery? When I was in Chithurst, I was very often the work monk, organizing. Sometimes it was Venerable Nando, sometimes myself, depending on who was around, different monks. But at times I would be in charge of the work, and the work was very complex, and I didn't know much. So it's kind of nerve-wracking, to say the least. And I didn't like doing it, but I realized, well, someone's got to do it. Someone's going to do it. So I just took it on as a kind of, okay, Longpo, I'll try to help you. And it was interesting to watch that, to watch my own fears and sense of inadequacy, but then just through doing it and trying to learn and so on, there's some sense of character, good character developed. Not because I was autonomously sitting in my own space, but more because I had to enter into something which was very, very difficult, very confusing, a lot of dukkha in that sense. But how could I develop that more mature attitude, a less fearful attitude, more confident attitude? And these are not separate from the ideas of samadhi and so on, because, you know, to have good samadhi, you need really good emotional stability. You need a sense of self-worth. You need a sense of confidence and all manner of things. And these can be developed through that kind of relationship that we have in the Sangha. I would try to take on jobs that other people didn't want. So one of the things, we had to clean out we had this Victorian house in Chithurst, so we had to clean out the septic system, which was 6 million years old, I think. And it was not pretty work. And I remember, that's where I met my friend Nick Scott. We were both up to our knees in, I won't say what, human muck. And, Bhante, who are you? And he became a friend for life. So we sometimes joke, we met at the septic tank of Chithurst. And that was not a pleasant thing to do, but just a sense of, okay, like I'm grateful to Ajahn Sumedho, and well, someone's got to do it. It's a kind of way you develop character, don't you? And we all do that, whether it's with kids or vocation or whatever. And that way, it seems to me, is not an idea about a strong sense of self. It's not an ideal about what it's reality. You're always touching reality, the reality of this other people's emotions. So like one of the things I try to reflect on in monastic life is that if I take something good from someone, I also have to take something bad from them. It ain't fair to say, I'll only take the good side when you do what I want, but when you don't do what I want, I'm going to reject you. To me, that doesn't seem very fair, because there is no way I can always do, or anyone else can do for me, what I want all the time. It's just not Dhamma, it's not nature. So sometimes someone is very helpful, and then sometimes they're in a very difficult time, and their, you know, mood is difficult. I have to accept both, don't I? And that's empathy. I think that is empathy. Being grateful for the help, but also not demanding that. And that is a kind of maturing of character too. It's a growing of character, which is not just, it's like more like a parent the parent accepts all the moods of the child. Right? Just oh, the child's in a nice mood, okay, I'll feed it. Now the child's in a bad mood, sorry kid, you're not getting any food today. It'd be horrible, wouldn't it? Be horrible. And the same way, when we relate to each other in community life, sometimes, you know, community life, sometimes we're going through our stuff. It has to be. We're trapped into this monastery. And we're going through maybe difficult things or whatever, and to allow for that. And how do we allow for that? Well, with action and speech, we always submit to the authority of our moral discipline. That was always, if someone goes outside our moral discipline, we say, I'm sorry. That you can't do. So that's safe. So it's safe that way. But then if I feel depressed or fearful or down, there's no rule that says I have to be brave all the time, I have to be chipper, I have to be happy, that I like being here. There's no rule that says that. And so each of us, as we learn about ourselves, we go through difficulties, we go through challenges, conflicts, right? And the kind of empathy is that's all right too. But with action and speech, we're always submitting to an authority of a particular way of a culture that we try to live by. So in the you know, if you use that kind of worldly analogy, in the same way, the way we understand kind of conscious nature of being a human being, and the way we understand suffering and the end of suffering, which is the whole point of this outfit, is also to submit to the authority of Dhamma, not to the authority of our own ego, willful, trying to just control our minds. And this is very important, that to be free from suffering, always, you know, it's always predicated on right understanding. It's not predicated on right will. Right? It's always right understanding. And so what we're trying to do is understand the reality of our suffering, just like the reality of the egg, the chainsaw, the language, the musical instrument, and the reality of our suffering is this way, as Lompo Sumeru would say. It's like feeling like this way. And taking that, submitting to that and looking at that, rather than thinking, well, the problem of the suffering is some external source. So, like, say, if someone becomes ill in the monastery, if someone has an unfortunate foot operation or something like that, and all of a sudden the capacity to function is changed radically just because of some illness, some incapacity. The physical suffering, yeah, it's in the body, but the mental suffering is that resistance or the disappointment, and natural, it's natural. If you get sick, so actually feel disappointed with that, not want that, but that's the reality. And that's the authority. The authority is the nature of the body to get sick, the nature of the body not to always be healthy. And then the suffering is not wanting to be that way, obviously. And it's, you can't just dismiss it if someone has a chronic illness or has some, you can't just dismiss it and say to them, oh, just let go, it'll be all right. It's not that easy. It's not that easy, because these things are powerful forces in consciousness. So we give ourselves a lot of space to kind of suffer through that and struggle through that. But the encouragement is always that even within sickness, that even within whatever it is, there is awareness. There is awareness of change, and that's the real way of being with reality. Just like to understand how to understand a person, you have to be with them, you have to hear them, you have to give them time to speak. If you're just reacting all the time, then you don't really understand them, you can't offer anything. Same way with our own suffering, you have to give it a chance to speak, to say something. So if it's like some physical disability or a chronic illness, it'll speak to you. It'll say, I don't want this, I want something else. And then the practice is, oh, what's the suffering? Is it really the egg, or do I want the egg to be an apple? That's the problem. I want the egg to be an apple, but it's not. The egg is the egg. And certainly I don't wish you rotten eggs. But, we get different types of eggs through our lives at different times. Sometimes, the situation is like not getting along with someone in the monastery for some reason or whatever. Is it that person? Well, yeah, that person makes the thing uncomfortable in my own mind. But what's the reality? Reality is this, and there's my resistance to it. And this is, again, all done within the framework of the moral discipline of a monastery, of the Vinaya, so it's safe that way. Anyone starts to mess with that, we say, I'm sorry, you've got to live by the rules, you've got to play the game. So Ajahn Chah would say to me, "Larry Tomo, why do you always just work with the guys you like?" Huh? Of course I'd work with the guys I like. He said, "Why don't you work with the people you dislike?" What? What he's pointing to was, just look at that, the kind of seeking of comfort and safety and just being with someone who you find annoying or disturbing. And it was quite a challenge, actually, quite a challenge to do that. Where I was just doing what I wanted to do and doing, well, what's appropriate, what's the time and place, what would be useful here. So the life of a monastery is very ordinary in that way. It's very, very ordinary that way, nothing terribly exciting. But it's also very profound if you understand how you develop the character of enlightenment, the foundation of enlightenment, through the sense of contemplating reality. And this is real, this is the way it is now, and what am I adding to it? What is my resistance to the reality of the way things are? So I'll leave that for reflection.
Pranamayam dhamma gathaya sadhu karang dadamase
sadhu sadhu sadhu.